This is Tales of Northern Michigan's Past with Christopher Struble, and this is part two of his conversation with Tyler DeBoard, manager of the House of Ludington in Escanaba.
Another person that stayed there that was documented, and I find this very interesting because, again, we're going back to that era where all you had to do was cross state lines, but Babyface Nelson, you have him listed as one of the things, one of the famous people there too. Well, this is a well-known fact that let me see what the date was, August 18th, 1933, Babyface Nelson decided to come around the south side of Lake Michigan, and they thought they would hit the bank at Grand Haven, which was going to be easy pickings for them. Well, there was a hell of a shootout. They were expected to show up that day, and five people, nobody died, but five people were wounded, and Babyface Nelson was sent home sort of with a little bit of egg on his face. And all he had to do, literally, was when he crossed the Michigan border into Indiana, he was out of reach of the police at that time. Again, extradition was almost impossible. So to think that these guys were going up through the top of the Mitt and hiding out up there and maybe going through the south of the Mitt and committing crimes, we know that this happened again with Little Bohemia and Johnny Depp, that great movie that's out right now, Public Enemy. You can find it on Netflix and stuff, but it hyperbolizes and takes quite a few liberties, but we know that these guys were escaping to these small places to hide out in northern Michigan or Wisconsin, just to get out of the city limits or the state limits of Illinois. So very, very common experience there. A little bit about everything in town is called Ludington. It's the House of Ludington. Yep. You've got Ludington Street. If you didn't know better, somebody would think I'm telling the wrong story. how did they get the name the House of Ludington, and does it have anything to do with Ludington, Michigan?
Yes, there's some ties to all that. It actually, everything Ludington is named after Nelson Ludington. Nelson Ludington was a very large lumber baron who owned a lot of large tracts of timberland in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where he was actually associated with the founding of the city of Escanaba as well, which is really interesting. And he brought a lot of the lumber industry to the UP and other areas of the Midwest. And to this day, we here in Escanaba still continue our logging and lumber industry. And we also are one of the larger areas that has a very large paper mill to this day up and running. He also had influence down in lower Michigan, to where Ludington, Michigan is named after Nelson Ludington as well.
Yeah. Tell us a little. So some of the industry you talked about, lumbering, and to this day still paper mills, but you had iron ore and coal docks there too, right? Is that correct? Like those big docks right across from the hotel there out into the bay?
Yeah, so we had a big iron ore industry as well, where iron ore ships would come back and forth here. And it was big booming back in the day of World War I, World War II, when iron ore was in need during those times. That back in that day, they predicted Escanaba to grow as large as Chicago back then. That's how booming we were during the iron ore mining industry and logging. That it was just huge. And then iron ore started tapering off and the demand isn't there anymore. So we currently do not do any iron ore shipping from Escanaba to today. Mm-hmm.
And then tell us a little bit more. Pat Hayes, is that correct? The gentleman that took over for a while there?
Yeah, so Pat Hayes brought a lot of the pizzazz and the elegance of the House of Ludington back to its prime when he took over in 1940 to 1969. Pat Hayes had supposedly connections to Chicago, and potentially the rumors are possibly connections to the Chicago Mafia. Can't be confirmed or denied at this point. But he was one that, lived here on site. And like I said, too, he was also, if anyone checks out the House of Ludington, a glass elevator was installed here back in 1959 by Pat Hayes. Pat Hayes put the glass elevator in. When he did this, he actually never got the correct permits from the city to build this. But it wasn't going to stop him from doing it. So he made sure nothing was going to interrupt this project. So he would stand outside with a shotgun to make sure the city never intervened with this project, and it was completed.
These are the good old days, right?
Oh, yeah, right.
And then you showed me, like, coming down the hallway. Is he the one installed all the porthole windows? And you said it was kind of keep track of operations?
Yeah, so Pat Hayes was very meticulous to make sure his staff was constantly working. So he put in all these little porthole windows throughout the building to watch what's going on throughout this whole building at all times. He had windows and little see-through glass that he was able to watch everything going on in his building. That's how meticulous he really was in the expectation for his staff.
And then you think he may have been connected to some people with some influential power in the area, or even maybe farther reaching than that, in order to get these things done, was simply standing out front with a shotgun.
Yeah, we do believe there was some kind of influence and ties there. But what's really, you know, something to talk about too, like we get to, you know, the end of time with Pat Hayes in passing away in 1969 here at the House of Ludington. The history continues that people believe that his spirit lives on here in the House of Ludington and to watch over the current owners and the establishment to this day.
Well, that was going to be my next question, because I always do, I do all the haunted ghost tours in town. And in fact, we tried running a full series of just ghost stories on this podcast. We were doing Ghost of Northern Michigan's Past too, but I'm very critical about what stories we tell. We want to make sure that they're corroborated and we're not just saying things, but you talk about a place that just sure seems like it would be haunted. And I'm kind of guessing you guys probably get reports of activity in the building. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. We get reports to this day from guests that have stayed with us to previous people that have lived here. When we talk about some of the things, I can give you some examples. I mean, just my experience alone working here is, and I've seen it in the kitchen. You can ask my kitchen staff. You'll randomly have these pots and pans just go flying off the shelf. Nobody's even around. And then my other staff, my wait staff, talk about, they believe that there's a ghost cat, because they constantly are tripping over something. And to this day that I've known, in the dining room, there's this one chair in the dining room we will tuck in every evening. By morning, every morning, that chair is pulled out again.
These are classic classic hotel ghost stories.
I've
been collecting these for 30 years, and it's like the stories always, the themes always seem to be so consistent among, you know, different locales like that. But yeah, in hotels, mm-hmm. all that energy. I live in an 1880s hotel, if you can imagine, right downtown Petoskey. My building was built in 1880 and they converted it a few years ago. And my wife doesn't believe in these kind of things, but I'm telling you what, there's been enough. She's the one that gets most of the experiences in the apartment, which is really strange. But our living room is, and they didn't used to do this in hotels, but our living room is room 13. And they used to have all kinds of parties up there and seances. They had suitcases glued to the ceiling, and they'd do all kinds of stuff you're not supposed to do in room 13s, especially if it's going to be a family's living room at some point. But there's definitely an energy in my building, and you don't have to believe in ghosts to feel the history. Obviously, like you mentioned, walking around in those hallways, even when I was walking around in the hallways, you know, everything tilts a little bit. You can hear creaking and cracking, and you can just feel the history. Again, you don't have to feel paranormal to feel the weight of the history of that building and all the people that would have stayed there over the course of, you know, so many seasons, hundreds and plus, you know, seasons. And then all that energy, you know, again, the positive and the negative. I mean, who knows, Will Chamberlain still may be doing some slam dunks in your dining room down there, right?
Right. Yep. You know, like we always say in any historical building, and being so old, if the walls could talk, or the floors could talk too, to tell you what's going on, it would just be amazing to hear what was going on back in that era and how long ago. It is super neat. That energy level is very high in these buildings. You get people that can just feel that high energy.
Yeah.
And it is truly amazing that you just wonder what was talked about in here, who walked all these floors, and it just boggles the mind, but it's really interesting to have that history.
Well, that's Michigan too, you know, because I mean, so many people came up north. I mean, these hotels were jam packed for 5-6 months straight. You know, at least 4 or 5 months during the peak season, and then even the off season. You know, it's hard for me to imagine Mackinac Island became a tourist destination as early as the late 1820s. I mean, we weren't even a state, you know, for another 20-25 years. So it's so strange that Mackinac Island, they had burned out the fur trade, and the next thing to do is they were already hitting on the tourism. So tourism in northern Michigan has been so popular, and so many people coming up here, and so diverse. So many wealthy people are, again, you know, gangsters and performers and artists, and so all that energy just resonates. I think it still just lingers in this area. And I always tell people, you know, on my ghost tours, you know, if you're from Ohio and you pass away in Petoskey, Michigan, you know, why not stay and haunt the Perry Hotel? It'd be much, much better than going back to, some place in Sandusky or something in your little condo there. Nothing against Sandusky, Ohio, but northern Michigan is very special. As far as right now, currently, there's been some different information kind of posted about what was going to be done with the hotel, but you guys will be up and running this season as a hotel.
Yeah, so we've been up and running. We just we've been up and running in full capacity about almost 2 years ago. We've just expanded our hotel rooms. So when we started off, we had about 12 hotel rooms. I'm currently at about 20 hotel rooms up and running, and they all have bathrooms, their own bathrooms. I also do have 7 apartments, so I do have living tenants on site here at the hotel. On top of that, we do have a full restaurant and bar that we do run operate. Right now, currently, we are doing Wednesday through Saturday. We do lunch from 11 to 2 and then dinner from 4 to 9. We, in addition to that, we have a very large ballroom to be able to host some cool events or weddings or functions here locally or beyond. And what's really cool, what else, is we try to bring in some fun entertainment. So every Wednesday night, we provide live entertainment every Wednesday night in our pub.
Mm-hmm. And you guys are, I can imagine you're still like a wedding destination. Do you host weddings there and wedding parties?
Yeah, we can definitely do that in our ballroom with a capacity max about 200. And then if it's a nice day out, we do have a large courtyard connected to the ballroom.
Right.
So we're willing to work with you on hosting an event or wedding reception here at the House of Ludington.
Tell me a little bit about the ballroom. Didn't you? I think you gave me some information when I was up there the last time, too. What year was the ballroom added?
So the side where the ballroom is was the addition that was added in 1903, that expansion. And it was actually built for living quarters. So that side was actually split up into living quarters. And those were the people that owned the companies here in Escanaba that actually lived here on site at the House of Ludington. That ballroom was originally never a ballroom. It wasn't put in until the 1980s by that owner that was able to tear down the walls that separated the rooms to expand it into a ballroom currently.
And I thought the apartments were super cool too. They got a little bit of a retro vibe, but you know, you could do a lot worse in the middle of Escanaba in the winter. You got to look at the view of the water, you know, from the building. They were very comfortable. They kind of had like this kind of a super cool kind of hip, kind of a hipster retro vibe to them. So I thought the apartments were pretty cool too, especially the one you showed me that was unoccupied at that time. Mm-hmm. What does a year round hotel cost? Or apartment in the hotel?
So our apartments vary. Right now they're between, you know, the $800 to $1,200 monthly rental for that rentals. And then our hotel rooms range, depending on which season, off season or on season, can vary from $75 to $150 a night, depending on what type of room you're looking for, because none of our rooms are exactly alike. Each room is completely different from each other.
So if you want a room that's not haunted, it's more or less now with ghost tourism being popular.
You could put a special request into me to say, I'd like the room with the most activity, or I want a room that has no activity at all.
I do that. And sometimes it backfires on me when I ask it. Then I ask a smart ass question. I'll say, is this hotel got ghosts? And like one time I talk about this at the Perry Hotel. I came up and I asked the concierge, I said, you know, is this place haunted? He goes, are you a reporter? Are you here to do a story? I'm like, no, I just don't want the most haunted room in an old hotel. He goes, well, I tell you what, I get off work in about 45 minutes. I can tell you some stuff off the record. I'm like, this is, maybe I'll stay at the Holiday Inn. This is what I was expecting. You know, I got a little bit more than I was, what I was asking for there. One thing too, you mentioned Capone and when he was allegedly there. We've got the turret upstairs, and then you mentioned, you know, his henchmen would use that to look around. Now it was later used as a lookout tower for the Coast Guard, correct?
Yeah, so it was used as a lookout tower for the Coast Guard because it was at the highest point in the area. And what's really cool up there too is those people that were part of the Coast Guard lookout tower would actually initial their names in the old wood up there. And when you're up there too, the light fixture is a ship wheel with light bulbs on it, still up there to this day, in recognizing that this was a Coast Guard lookout tower.
So cool. So cool. Everybody loves that kind of history too. One thing too, you led me to the house. You directed me to the house. It's currently going under some renovations. It supposedly used to be the house owned by Capone. What are your memories growing up, and what people said about that property? It's kind of just generally assumed that that was his house, correct?
That's always been the word of mouth handed down for many, many years that was the Capone house.
Mm-hmm.
Off in town, off South 10th Street. That was the Capone house. And then supposedly tales say that there was a tunnel that ran supposedly from the house of Ludington all the way to that house.
That's what I had heard online too, and found online was some of my information I came across too. The house looks like I said, it's currently going under some renovations at this moment.
Yeah, so they're doing some updating there, doing some a little bit more expansion too. That the owner is doing over there and doing a good job at it, but the outside and a lot of the inside is still historically left untouched.
Nice. Yeah, the area I saw was still just the way it would have been back in the day. And then, you know, one thing I was surprised about too is you enter in. Of course, it makes sense because it was such a rich, booming town at one point. Some of the beautiful houses and the architecture as you're coming around that Capone house, or the alleged Capone house, there's some beautiful homes downtown Escanaba.
Beautiful large homes. Remember, this is an older community. And if you're following down our Lakeshore Drive, which is a beautiful drive to go through, in a beautiful large Ludington Park, which is like over 2 miles long, those Lakeshore Drive homes are very old Victorian large homes that have been around for hundreds of years on this community, because we have a very old area of history that these homes are still existing to today.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And what kind of who lives in those homes now? Is it still like the owners of the industry up there, or do you get a lot of summer people? Is it you know, just people that just I mean, obviously prices are probably a little bit better there than they are in Petoskey, Michigan. But do you have a lot of retirees, or who makes up the town, and what is the population now in the Escanaba area?
So we're currently at around 12,000 something, give or take. A lot of the things have changed since I was younger. When I was younger, the population was at about 14,000, 13,000 people. And at that time, it was an older generation living here, and the younger generation were moving away. What we're seeing now is a different change. We're actually seeing the middle-aged 40s moving back here to raise families. And we're seeing the decline of the older generation decline a little bit, and the increase of the middle age coming in here, which is a good thing. And so what we're seeing is a change on what it's been in the past to where we are now. And we're seeing a big expansion of people returning that used to live here to raise their families. We're seeing some future development coming our way here in Escanaba. So it's not what it used to be known as, kind of back in my day. It was, is this the retirement community?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're trying to change that image of, we're not a retirement community. We're a booming city and community that is looking to continue to grow and expand, bring in development, fresh new people, new ideas. And that's where we're moving forward currently.
And there's big plans right across the street from you, right?
Yeah, there's a couple projects here right down where we are at the end of Ludington Street in Escanaba. We're going to be getting a development of some condos being built across the street to open up a different type of housing market. And in addition to that, we're also going to be getting another hotel right on this end, which will be really cool to add some more development down here to start drawing more at the end of Ludington Street.
Yeah, yeah. McDonald's is always next to a Burger King for a reason. They both get more more visitors. Yeah, more people there. And of course, the town has another separate little bit of fame associated with the actor Jeff Daniels and Escanaba in the Moonlight. Has anybody ever, I've seen him several times around Petoskey. He hangs out here. He likes to RV all over the place. Big Bay's where his wife's family's from. But have you ever seen him skipping around through the Escanaba area?
Not so much as it was in the past when they were coming through doing the filming of Escanaba and the Moonlight around this area. He may have visited, you know, once or twice after that, but it might not be something that, you know, he just wants to chill out and check us out again or hang out here. When he did the filming or afterwards. So,
what year was that film made?
Escanaba in the Moonlight. Well, now you're testing me.
Probably I was like younger. Mid 90s, maybe somewhere in there. I've only seen it once.
2001.
It's an interesting movie. They love making fun of Michiganders, but of course he's a Michigan guy and he loves the UP. I met him. He was doing a small concert. He did two concerts at Crooked Tree here in town, and the first one sold out. So he did a second performance. Mm-hmm. Crooked Tree is just a beautiful venue in downtown Petoskey, and the second showing that he did that night, the second performance, had very few people. I mean, because they had sold out the first showing. So I mean, I'm saying like maybe 30 people in the auditorium. You got Jeff Daniels, you got Brian Vander Ark from the Verve Pipe, and then this guy playing multiple instruments was just spectacular. But because of the close of the small crowd and the fact that the acoustics in there are so great, I had the luxury, and he's a hell of a good guitar player, but he actually unplugged the acoustics, took the microphones away, and I saw a true acoustic performance by Jeff Daniels in Northern Michigan here. It was really cool, and I walked outside, I was walking my dog, and here he was, loading all of his guitars, one of them that was given to him by George Harrison, which was kind of super cool. And he was loading all of the guitars that he brought with him into his RV, and then he was getting ready to take off. And I just started talking to him. I mean, he's just kind of a normal guy if you catch him off when there's not a bunch of people around him. But he said he was getting ready to go to St. Ignace on his way to Big Bay. And so I thought I'd meet him in St. Ignace and be like, oh, you camp here too? Oh, what a coincidence. I didn't, you know, and kind of be the stalker there. But yeah, he's here in Petoskey quite a bit. And got a couple of pictures taken with him. It's kind of fun. Dumb, and I would be dumber, apparently. So, what's the best way for people to reach out to you guys to try to get some reservations? Summer's kicking off, so we want to get them up there and booked, and they can, you know, ask for the, you know, more historic rooms or, you know, whatever they're looking for. What's the best way to reach you guys?
We'd love to have more guests and new people to experience the history here. So a couple of ways that you can do that is you can definitely call us to make a reservation by phone, which is 906-786-6300. Another option you could do is, of course, you can book online and see images of the rooms if you go to www.houseofludington.us. And then we also have a Facebook page where you could Facebook us or look for us, House of Ludington, and it will search for it and find our right there, our Facebook page as well.
Well, I tell you what, even if people don't stay the night, I'd encourage you guys to make sure and stop by this summer, grab a lunch, grab a dinner, you know, take a look around the old building. There's only so many of these capsules, these time capsules left, even in Michigan, where we used to have so many of them. So it's a rare opportunity to step back into the 1800s and then feel all that history. So, we thank Tyler DuBord very much for A, not having me arrested when I snuck into the building, and then B, showing me around. And thanks for your expertise and your enthusiasm for the area and the hotel, because these places need to be preserved, and that history needs to be preserved also. So thank you very much for what you're doing and for joining us today.
Thank you, Chris, and thanks for having me. I always appreciate this. It's a great opportunity to expand knowledge and bring out some more history to the people, listeners, and everyone else in your viewing area.
Well, if you get a report of a bald guy sneaking around in there again, there's a good chance it's me.
All right, we'll keep an eye out for you.
Well, have a great summer. We appreciate it.
You too, Chris. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for listening to Tales of Northern Michigan's Past with Christopher Struble. Tune in next time as Chris brings you more exciting and adventurous stories from Northern Michigan's past.